entitled The Glories of Lord Nichiren and the Balaram, text number 67. Aganyananta yata andasa nivesha tata rupa purusha kore shabata prakasha. The purusha enters each and every one of the countless universes. He manifests himself in many separate forms, as there are universes. Text 68. Purusha nasate yabe bahiraya shvasa nishvasa saite haya brahmanda prakasha. When the purusha exhales, the universes are manifested with each outward breath. Punarapishvase jabe pravesha antare shvasa saha brahmanda pashe purusha sharire. Thereafter, when he inhales, all the universes again enter his body. Purport. In his form as Karnadaksai Vishnu, the Lord impregnates material nature by his glands. The transcendental molecules of that glands are particles of spirit or spiritual atoms, which appear in different species of life according to the seeds of their individual karma from the previous cosmic manifestation. And the Lord himself, by his partial representation, creates a body of innumerable universes, and again enters each of those universes as Garbhadaksai Vishnu. His coming in contact with Maya is explained in the Bhagavad Gita by a comparison between air and the sky. The sky enters everything, in everything material, yet it is far away from us. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Ginandana Salakya Shakshuri Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So, Lord Nichananda is the first expansion of Lord Krishna. And it is said that, therefore, he is non-different from Lord Krishna, the same Supreme Lord, Bhakta-rupa-svarupakam. He is the same original form of the Supreme Lord. Lord Nichananda, however, is in a different mood than Lord Chaitanya, or who is Lord Krishna Chaitanya. Lord Nichananda Balaram is in the mood of the servitor Godhead, Sevya Bhagavan and Sevak Bhagavan. Sevya Bhagavan is the Supreme Lord who is being served, and Sevak Bhagavan is the Lord in the mood of a servant. And in that regard, Lord Balaram or Lord Nichananda is the original spiritual master, Adi Guru, because no one serves like he does. He serves the Lord in all respects. And that is the theme of this chapter. This chapter is describing how Lord Nichananda is serving. It is described that Lord Nichananda expands himself. He becomes the original Sankarsan. And he becomes Sesha. And then it says he also becomes the three Purusa avatars. And thus, he serves Lord Krishna in five different ways. In these five different ways, as he serves him completely. He serves him as a personal attendant by becoming his bed, his shoes and all the paraphernalia that are being used for the worship. That is in his role as Kainkarya, a personal attendant. He also becomes the root of so many incarnations within the Chaturvyuha as Sankarshan. He becomes the root of so many forms. And also Lord Sadashiva is emanating from him and finally impregnating the material, the unmanifest material energy in the form of pradhana. So in all respects, Lord Balaram, Lord Nityananda, is involved with the with assisting the Supreme Lord. Then Karnadaksaya Vishnu, Ksiradaksaya Vishnu, Garbhadaksaya Vishnu, he is first the original Mahavishnu. Then he is expanding into Garbhadaksaya Vishnu, entering in each universe, Ksiradaksaya Vishnu, within the heart of every living being, within every atom. In that way, it is all Balaram. And in the spiritual world, Balaram is representing Vrindavan. And in that way also providing the pleasure grounds for the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. So Balaram's service is very complete, and therefore he is Adiguru, the original spiritual master, the original servant of the Lord. And by pleasing him, by assisting him in serving the Supreme Lord, can we naturally attract his favor? Because anyone who serves the Lord is naturally dear to Lord Balaram. And thus we try to come to that point of learning how to serve. Anadir Bahya Mukha, the living being has been in the material world since time immemorial. And we have lost that service propensity very much. We have directed it towards satisfying our own senses. Admendire pritivanche tarabori kam. When one tries to satisfy his own senses, then one speaks of lust. Krishnendriya pritiyacha dara premanam. But when we serve the senses of Krishna, Rishikesh, then, who is the proprietor of the senses, then we speak of love. So it is said, when the living entity enters into the material world, his original love becomes transformed into lust. And thus, it is a process of practice in devotional service. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasana nyagamina. It is said that one must practice this devotional service. Although devotional service is, as Srila Prabhupada explained, not an artificial imposition on the mind, it is a natural process, still it must be practiced. And in the beginning, that practice may be difficult. As Srila Rupa Goswami gives the example of the jaundice patient who cannot taste the sweetness of sugar, in the beginning, this devotional service may not be performed with great taste, although it is natural. Another example that is given is that it's natural for a child to walk, but still it has to be practiced before one can actually walk. So in this way, there is devotional service in practice known as sadhana bhakti. And those who are serving in this way out of sadhana bhakti are placed in the category, by Kavi Karnapur makes a category, makes various categories in which he places devotees, and he says there is a category of devotees who serve the Lord without taste. And then he's referring to sadhana bhakti, and then in raganuga bhakti, those who are serving the Lord with taste. Of course, there is taste from day one. There is no question of not coming to Krishna and not experiencing taste. And in fact, one can become very much inspired even in one's first meetings with Krishna consciousness. But once we take up the regular practice and we are simply performing devotional service according to rules and regulations, it's a struggle. And we are challenged to again and again renew our taste. And that is still, somehow or other, we carry on. But for many, spiritual life remains a struggle for so many years. And then, so how to rise above this struggling platform? That is that becomes a more and more relevant question with time. Because time goes by, somehow or other we are still here. Some taste is there, but not that much. So the question is, how can we actually break through to a point where our taste in devotional service becomes predominant? It is said in by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhuta, Tra Lulyam Api Mulyam Ekalam. He said that the root of attaining this higher taste is eagerness, lulyam. That eagerness must come in assisting Lord Nityananda. It is there where one can break through. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out that for those who are conditioned souls, they need to take shelter of the mercy of Lord Nityananda. For those who are liberated souls, they may, in Madhurya Ras, they may follow Srimati Radharani. But all others follow Lord Nityananda. So what to do? I'm in that category. I guess I'll stay there this lifetime, looking for the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Because Lord Nityananda is so extremely kind, so extremely generous, that he tends to overlook any shortcomings. After all, it is mentioned here in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Nityananda is himself so absorbed in serving Krishna, and the result is that he becomes so overwhelmed with ecstasy that he's not able anymore to see clearly. It is as if he is intoxicated by the ecstasy of this service, and the result is that when he is distributing the mercy, that he can no longer see who is qualified or who is not, and he just gives it to anybody. And that is, of course, that is giving us a lot of hope. I always remember with pleasure Satsarup Maharaj's condensed form of Lilamrita in poetry form, because it's very condensed, nice reading. And there he describes how, he said, Lord Ramachandra, he went to Lanka with an army of monkeys. He said, and Prabhupada had to do it with hippies from the lower east side. That is a fact that if we look at the monkey associates of Lord Ramachandra, they were quite exalted. Hanuman was very learned and very cultured. When he met Lord Ramachandra, he even didn't just speak the appropriate words, but he even spoke on an appropriate note. He even knew exactly how high or low the voice had to be in addressing a respectable person. I would have no idea how to do that, being uncultured. So we see that although we have so little qualification, although we are weak, although we are restless, although we have very little determination, we can take shelter of the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Prayer will certainly attract the mercy of Lord Nityananda. However, the more active we become in assisting Lord Nityananda in serving Lord Chaitanya, naturally, the more his mercy will come in our direction. And immediately, as soon as that mercy begins to flow, the taste is there. Then actually the taste is there. Therefore, the eagerness must be displayed in service. It is there where everything rests on that, on service attitude. The very key of spiritual life is found in dasyam. Srila Rupa Goswami explains like that. He speaks about dasyam. He said service attitude. That is the very basis of all of spiritual life. And then he makes a distinction in that dasyam. He said there is the general service attitude, and there is kainkarya, the service in the mood of a personal attendant. And he classifies that mood as the highest, because in the general service mood, one can say, well, what can we offer to Krishna? We may offer him juice, water, milk, all these things are possible. But then, in the mood of a personal attendant, there are different occasions on which various things are offered. Just like in Vrindavan, in the Radharaman temple in the winter, Radharaman gets khichdi in the morning for breakfast. He gets hot khichdi for breakfast. It's winter. I mean, that's what you want. Some nice ghee on top. Like that, in the winter, the socks come out, the chadars come out, because the worship is personal and the worship is relating to the need of Krishna rather than our need. So that is very nice, to simply think of what does Krishna require? How is Krishna comfortable? Not to think of what is allowed within the limitations of all the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness, and then try to stretch the envelope, so to speak. Try and stretch the boundaries. Obviously, if it's all about just reading the label and it has no forbidden ingredients, then it's all right. From one level, it's all right. It's in another level, it's obviously not all right. In the level that it's at least not breaking the regulative principles, it's all right. But in the terms of what consciousness there is in that preparation, I don't know, but it's not going to be all right. It's going to be, that foodstuff is obviously prepared by those who are full of lust and could even affect whoever eats it in the same way. Also, once one proud donor, he had a chips factory and gave me a full tour of the chips factory. So I saw the trucks of potatoes coming in the factory and being sliced up by machines and dried, placed on a conveyor belt, go through hot air and be dried and then into the dip and the hot oil, and on the other side they were blowing spices on the chips, and then they were ready. And then the workers would just stick their hands in those chips and munch away while the chips then were moving along and going into a chute, and where they were bagged and sealed. And then they reach the devotees who read the labels and then make a nice offering. Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, or something like that. Whereas if you would do the same thing here in the temple, if someone just walks into the kitchen, sticks his hand in the pot, what are we going to do with that preparation? I don't think we'll offer it anymore. So like that, when one gets into that mood of the personal attendant, of the Lord, then automatically the quality goes up. Because when it's for Krishna, then, well, it has to be first class. So in this way, Lord Nityananda is a first class servant, because he always provides the need of the Lord. He is always focused on what the requirement of the Lord is in a particular situation and serves him according to his need and not according to his own idea of what service he would like to do. So in that way, Lord Nityananda is teaching us how to become the servant. That's not a simple matter, to become a servant. It's very difficult, because it's not in our conditioning to start off with. You notice it when you fly, and you fly on the Asian airlines, and on the Western Airlines, and you notice that the stewardesses on the Asian Airlines find it much easier to serve. Even on Singapore Airlines, I must say, they still have a nice service attitude. They still come, greet you with folded hands, and say, "What would you like? Wine or liquor?" Or but with all the culture, very cultured. And you can just see that some culture is still there. Unfortunately, it's misdirected now. But here, that culture is not there. It's like, serve somebody? Well, you know, go get it yourself. Okay, yeah. Here it is, plunk. It's just so alien to our culture to serve. So there is a lot of inner resistance. It may take a long time for us to actually come down to this point. So when we endeavor hard in devotional service, then we find that we're still falling short. And that is where the element of blessings comes in, where we need blessings. We need the blessings of Lord Nityananda, we need the blessings of the devotees, of the Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas, who are the servants of Lord Nityananda, they can invoke his blessings upon us by their service. So thus, we are very careful. We become very careful. And with time, that becomes more important to value the Vaishnavas. In the beginning, maybe we are very concerned who is right and who is wrong, and we are ready to establish our right, but at the risk of burning out relationships, of damaging relationships. That's highly unfortunate, because amongst Vaishnavas are very precious, and actually we need all of them. There are very few, and one incident with a Vaishnava can create such a disturbance in a relationship, and that is so unfortunate, because for a lifetime we depend on the association of these few Vaishnavas, and then there's one that we cannot look straight in the eye, or one that we cannot be in the same room with, or all these kind of varieties of results of disturbed relationships. So, therefore, one must be very careful with Vaishnavas, Vaishnav Sevana. One must serve the Vaishnavas. Therefore, Vedic culture teaches how to deal, how to speak in a pleasing way. Like I was mentioning Hanuman, who spoke in a pleasing way. And Hanuman, when he first met Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman, then Hanuman spoke in a very pleasing way, and he introduced himself as the minister of Sugriva. And then, in response to Hanuman's introduction, Lakshman spoke as the servant of Lord Ramachandra, the same Lord Nityananda. And Lakshman... it's okay. Lakshman began to glorify Lord Ramachandra by saying, "This is Ramachandra, the crown prince of the Raghu dynasty." And he began to describe some of his glories as a great hero and warrior. And then he introduced himself and said, "And I am his servant." And that was quite good, because after all, he was the younger brother. So after glorifying Ramachandra very nicely, then he could have just said, "Yes, and I'm his younger brother, sharing in the glories. Right? I'm of the same glorious dynasty, almost as good as him." No, he didn't do that. He simply said, "And I'm his servant." So, such a nice mood. Such a nice mood. It may take time. It may take time to make us a little humble. Everything is explained in the scripture, but I don't know how much we learn from the scriptures. The scriptures are teaching us undoubtedly, but to what extent are we able to assimilate? To what extent are we able to surrender to the scripture? And therefore, oftentimes, at least in my own life, I find that it is through life, through the school of hard knocks, that one learns a little bit and then realizes, yes, I should pay more attention to the instructions of the scriptures. These instructions come to life. Oftentimes, it is like that. So, also, with time, we have all reason to become a little more humble, because with time we are losing. Try this one. With time, we are losing our power. With time, we get diminished. Just like we may give the example of beauty. One may be, when we are young, some, most are not, but some are extremely good-looking. Some people, they've just got it. Right? Most people are sort of ugly in some way or other, or something ugly about them. Something wrong. But then time moves along, and with time, even the most beautiful ones become ugly. Everyone becomes ugly with time. All of our capacity gradually, all our ability gradually becomes diminished with time. So with time, we become a little humbled, a little. We realize that actually I'm very vulnerable. And with time, we may also realize that I have not yet, so much time went by, and I hardly took off. I still didn't get off the ground. I still am in the early stages of Krishna consciousness. I'm still struggling. I still don't have that much taste. The years went by, but where am I now? How much have I really advanced? And time is now running out. When one comes to that point, one may become more eager for the blessings of the Vaishnavas and the blessings of the merciful Lord Nityananda. One may be more and more eager. First, we may think, I can do it all myself. I don't need anybody. But that runs out over time. And therefore, somehow or other, as a movement, we have to come together. I was in South Africa in a program which it was an orientation day of a university, and this program was in a sports hall, and there were about 5,000 students, I guess 90% African, and then the rest Indian and European origin. So this particular program, it was, I think, in 1995. So that was just after the apartheid system had been formally abolished. But it was an interesting program. They had asked us if we wanted to open the program with a kirtan, providing we were ready to feed all the 5,000 students, which we did. And we did both. We opened with a kirtan and fed all the students. And then they made a great effort to make it very multicultural. So they had an Indian dance, and then an African who was singing a song while rhythmically making clicks with his throat in the back and snapping his fingers in a different rhythm and doing a tap dance again in another rhythm, which was impressive. Then there was the dean came and gave a great speech, white he was, of course, about unity and brotherhood and how we committed grave mistakes in the past and how now we should forget the past and go forward to a new united future. And it looked like you want to keep your job. And then a band of Zulus came from the back, and the Zulu leader embraced the Indian lady in such a way that I thought, should we go and save her? And then he turned around and gave a speech, and it turned out that he was a professor in the university. And all spoke about brotherhood and how now all the different races and cultures had to learn to understand each other and come together and so on. And it just sounded totally hollow and artificial. Because it's not possible. It's not possible that we are all united and that real brotherhood can just so easily come about, because we are all different, very different. Just like Holland, one of the smallest countries in the universe, but there are people from below the rivers and from above the rivers. Below the rivers and above the rivers. And it's a universe, it's another universe. I'm from above the rivers, and the guys from below the rivers. First of all, they speak with a soft G, which is considered really a sign of weakness from those who are above the rivers. So there you already go. So much division. And Srila Prabhupada pointed that out, that the United Nations, he said, they have not at all united the nations. More and more flags, right? What's the question of becoming united? So brotherhood is very difficult, also amongst us. When I first joined this movement, I found that, I thought that now it's going to be wonderful, because now, from now on, I'm going to be with like-minded people. My whole life I've had to spend with people who were just totally thinking opposite of me, and now I'm going to be with like-minded people. It's going to be wonderful. And then I noticed that horrible person who I always had a real problem with, that he had also joined. It's like, that was the issue. So what to do? We are very different, and we may have our natures, and these natures may be always different. What to do? But how important are these things? What is more important than natures and such differences is our mutual commitment. Our mutual commitment to serve. To serve the parampara coming down from Lord Nichananda Balaram, and to assist him. And in that way, we can appreciate people who are different. In that way, we can get beyond differences of character, culture, and so on. Simply, therefore, Srila Prabhupada explained that true brotherhood exists on the spiritual platform, and the spiritual platform means service. So in all respects, it is service attitude that can make the difference for us individually in invoking blessings from the Supreme Lord and the Vaishnavas, and it is service attitude that can make the collective difference. I have been a temple president in Vrindavan, which is a very big temple, and there are so many complications in Vrindavan. Right? I mean, endless complications. And Dhananjaya Prabhu was and Balagopal were for so many years managing the MPT, and they were having many similar complications. If it wasn't a municipality, it was whatever, the sweepers or who were jamming up the Sarkari line, the sewage line, or so many things. Endless pastimes in that place. And one difficulty that we faced in Vrindavan was that there were no devotees to take care of everything. It was a huge problem. We didn't have devotees. You didn't have devotees. Aren't there so many devotees living in Vrindavan? Yes, there are so many. There are, but they were not partaking in serving the deities. So it made it difficult. We were always with a skeleton crew, somehow or other, surviving. So somehow or other, we have to be a little generous, in our in serving together, in helping together, to go forward for spreading Krishna consciousness. After all, that was the order that Lord Nichananda received to spread Krishna consciousness. And we have the same order to spread Krishna consciousness. So it's there where the blessings are found, and it is there where taste enters. It is there where inspiration will come. It is there where strength will be found. It is there that we have the chance of survival in spiritual life, and it is there that at the end of life, we may be successful in our pursuits to go back to Godhead, in our service attitude. Okay, then I'll stop. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
I was wondering about one thing. You were talking about the tasteless, sometimes the person doesn't have a taste for the process.
Yeah.
But my question as well then is, isn't there supposed to be a certain as well situations where the concept that we usually say that whatever is advancing you in Krishna consciousness, you should do it, whatever it is not, you shouldn't.
Yes.
Isn't also the rules themselves in some regards applied on that rule? In the sense that there are situations that a person will be having an anti-situation for a certain rule and enforcing, so to say, the rule on the person will actually reject him from Krishna at the end of it. Isn't that as well supposed to be situations where you should, so to say, bend the rules to be applying it on a personal level to a certain person?
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada spoke to Tamal Krishnamurti about bending. He pointed out that one should bend, not break. One should try. So bending rules, some rules can one can bend. Some rules one cannot bend, obviously. Just like there was a teacher in Bengal who approached Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and said, it's too difficult. It's just too difficult. I mean, we cannot do it. We have to eat fish. If you just preach, you know, if you just change that rule, everything is possible. But please, you know, why are you stressing this so much? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, look, you have fallen into a well, right? It is my business to pull you out of the well. It is not my business to come down to your level. Yeah? So some things cannot be bent. Some things can be bent. Some things cannot be bent. Another, all right, to go into detail, that is another matter. But when we speak about the principles. So, yes, when we are preaching, and Prabhupada also pointed out that one should be very strict with himself, and one should be lenient with others in preaching. Not immediately so many rules from day one. But, first of all, even if one doesn't introduce all the rules all at once, still gradually will introduce more and more for the sake of bringing someone gradually up to the level of a resident of the spiritual world. I mean, the standard of the spiritual world is pure love of God, and everything else is a step on the way. So sometimes there are differences of opinion amongst different leaders, and some are very liberal and some are strict. Some are liberal in the mood from let's accommodate everyone somehow or other. Others are in the mood from let's set a standard. We need both. We need both these kinds of leaders. Because if all the leaders become very liberal, then the risk is there that at one point the standard becomes forgotten. And when the standard is forgotten, well, then we've lost something. We've lost something precious, it can be said. So we do need people who just from time to time stand up and say, this is the standard. And, you know, some people are really always there, right, to do that. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's Damodar Pandit, who was always reminding everyone of the standard. And the devotees were all afraid of him, and if they saw him coming. And, well, once he even went too far. He even did it to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which went too far. There is a need for people to stand up and say, this is the standard. And there's a need for others to be liberal. You know, ISKCON has changed so much. Eh? If you look at the history of ISKCON, it's amazing how much it has changed. I mean, I'm sure Dhananjaya would even feel, can tell you more of how it's changed than me. But it's changed so much in terms of standards, and it's become quite liberal in so many ways in comparison to what it was. In some ways that's very good, because it gives more room for human expression, and the result is that we find more opportunity to be natural. And when we're natural, then whatever we do accept, we may be able to sustain better. If we are forcing ourselves in a mold, then in due course of time, we may snap out of that mold. And many people did. So there's something to say for naturalness and going along and accommodating one's nature. On the other hand, it is a fact that some standards are forgotten now, or almost forgotten. They are really... therefore, we need a balance, I guess. Yeah, and in one's own person, one should never be liberal with himself. One should be strict with himself. I mean, that's recommended. Yeah.
Just a practical question. Sometimes people have so many, just recently I spoke to someone, so many allergies. So then, I mean, he says, I like the temple and I like the songs. I'm very new person.
Yeah.
I have so many allergies, I can't follow your diet. I have, you know, not out of taste for fish, but it's practically one of the few things I can eat.
Yeah. Ayurveda can cure allergies. Yeah. There are ways. Where there's a will, there is a way. I also have allergies. I'm allergic to incense. Yeah, a big problem with incense. As soon as I come in a room with incense, my nose starts running, and I sneeze, and I get asthmatic. And then every time you have to lead a kirtan, and my nose starts running in the middle of the kirtan, because especially in a small temple like this, the incense is almost in your nose. What to do? What to do? If it is?
A very new person who by some good fortune
comes, well,
then we just let him get more taste? Or
maybe. If someone cannot stop eating fish for whatever reason and has a justification for it, all right, we can have some patience. We can still engage such a person in some way or other in the process, and that regulative principle can come a little later. Yeah. It's not that on the first day people come through the door that all the regulative principles have to be followed, or even some people that regularly come to the temple. It can come gradual, step by step. But we should not say it's all right. It's, we shouldn't justify it. We should explain, no, it's not all right. It's not good. And of course, these people feel it themselves. They know very well. I was just as I was leaving South Africa, next to me there was a man and sitting on a seat, and he said, are you a Buddhist? Yeah? And I said, no, I'm a Hare Krishna. I said, oh, okay. And then he said, are you a vegetarian? I said, yes, I'm a vegetarian. And then he said, I'm a fish killer. Right? He said, I have a boat and I'm fishing and I'm a fish killer. He said, but I don't mind. Because, you know, I never kill anything that I can't eat. Right? So I could have easily said to him, well, you can also eat human beings, right, if you would want to. But I could have said something like that. But I didn't. Right? And I stayed silent, but he felt more and more guilty. Right? He felt so guilty that he started apologizing, you know, about all the things he was doing. So I didn't need to say anything. Just the presence was enough. Right? And all I had to say, I don't need to do all those things, you see. I'm quite satisfied without it. I said, why would you Why would you bother if you don't need to? So it's not always necessary to constantly hammer a person, but we should let him know that we disapprove of that. And ultimately, there are reactions for eating fish, and that he should know.
And there's a story of Prabhupada's sister.
Please go ahead. Yeah.
Well, she was initiated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura, and he got the name Bhavatarini. And her family arranged a wedding with one of her husband for her. He was non-vegetarian. And she was very disturbed by that. And what the outcome was, she went to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura and said, look, I'm initiated disciple of yours, and I just got married to a non-vegetarian, what should I do? And he said, you cook for him non-vegetarian things, but you have a separate pots that you keep. You keep pots for yourself, because obviously you're not going to break the principles, but for your husband, because now you're wed to him, so
yeah.
You're duty bound to serve him,
yeah.
Whatever he demands.
Yeah.
And I said, this way you won't get any problem.
Yeah.
So
amazing.
Her whole life, she followed that rule.
Hmm.
And of course, after he passed away.
Yeah.
And he never complained. He was very, very kind to her. It wasn't like that he was unkind. But that was the situation. So the guru is expert in understanding what to do according to time and circumstance.
Right. Right.
Very
nice. Yeah. No, that is very, very nice.
Go to the market and prepare the non-vegetarian items for her husband.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm not sure, just thinking about it, right? I'm not sure if that necessarily would be a blanket permission for anybody who is in that situation nowadays. Because I could also imagine she was in the traditional Bengali culture where a wife is meant to... What else can a wife do? You know what I mean? How can you be a wife and not serve the husband? Nowadays, you know, in these modern times, you might say, well, you can have, but you cook it yourself. Right? I mean, because we're living in that kind of time.
Yeah,
I'm saying maybe the circumstances now... Yeah. Oh yeah, you know, in South Africa, amongst the Indians, it happens a lot.
Even non-Indians.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a lot of examples from the Rotterdam Yatra where the Hindu couples, where the lady joined before the husband, and they get some cooking meat for them.
Yeah, yeah.
They certain in every way that they used to.
Yeah.
And at least three of those husbands, out of respect, in the end, the devotees.
Yeah.
Just because they appreciate their personal relationship with someone.
But still,
point, as a
that's it. I would have some hesitance, you know what I mean, to sort of say, okay, repeat that order just so liberally. Because I'm asked a question many times, see, and then it's sort of on my head. Yeah, when it's on your head, you know, such kind of adjustments. Well, then you think twice. You're also become responsible for this.
I personally took when I was president in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
There was one very nice educated girl who wanted to move into the temple. And I asked her, why do you want to do this? And she said, well, because I've been forced to marry someone who's non-vegetarian.
Yeah.
So... I wasn't exactly sure what to do in that circumstance. And unfortunately, Prabhupada was there, so I went and I told him, I said, this young lady has come, and she wants to see shelter in our society. She's from Delhi.
Mm-hmm.
And what should I do in that situation? He said, she must marry. And Krishna will protect her.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we cannot interfere with her destiny.
Yeah. But I also know cases where it was resolved, you know, where it's valuable, and I'm not in a disagreement or something, but because there are different situations, time, place, and circumstance, sometimes it has been resolved that the man eats non-vegetarian out of the house and vegetarian at home, and I know many Indian families that made that compromise.
Or just like the Sindhis, we used to get invited by this Mr. Damodar. Damodar Chandra. I don't know if you've heard of him. And he was very favorable to Krishna consciousness, but he was not vegetarian.
Yeah.
But he had one vegetarian day a week.
Yeah.
And he would invite us to his home.
Yeah.
He was actually a big donor.
Yeah.
He was, you know, he really loved the devotees very, very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very common.
I know. Yeah. Those are the days that I'm not so hungry. It's like always had some difficulty with that.
The Prabhupada told us to cultivate them.
Yeah, no. Appreciate. still I lose my appetite. Please.
One question, bro. I just met one lady. Somebody was in the Sankirtan, and she was like in the greetings. She was aspect that Sankirtan Bhakta or Bhaktin, I don't know, Mataji, could give her a hand in the when it was time to introduce. But one of the person just refused it instead of just. And she was like discussing that, how we supposed to act in the Sankirtan, in the book distribution, you know, when we are in the contact of different kind of people.
Yeah, of course, generally we are not, we are ready to shake hands, but she must have judged the situation, and you know, there are maybe situations where it's not suitable to give hands, but generally we're open to shake hands, that we do, but in some situations maybe she felt that it wasn't the right thing to do. It's not a standard. It's not a common standard. It's just an individual may, in a certain situation, decide, well, you know, at this time I'll just go like that. If someone is a little, let's say someone is a little intoxicated, you know what I mean? On Queen's Day, there will be lots of people who will want to shake our hands, and we're not going to shake them. Yeah? We're going to raise our hands, or we're going to fold our hands, but lots of these hands I'm not going to shake on Queen's Day. Because they're all drunk, and they're going to maybe pull my arm and you know, and do other funny things. Or they're going to, if they would touch the hand of the girl, they will not just take the hand, they will try and embrace the whole girl, which goes a bit too far for us.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean? So, according to time, place, and circumstance.
Okay.
Yeah. You know.
But there is not any...
There's not a rule of...
No. You're not supposed to give the hand.
No.
Well, all right.
We'll shake hands. There's even a story that Krishna shook hands with Lord Brahma. So the original handshake starts on the spiritual platform. So handshaking is bona fide in Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah.
When you say the spiritual platform, you mean assisting Lord Nityananda, then do you mean Lord Nityananda's representative then?
Yeah, of course. I mean, who are we to directly assist? I mean, it comes parampara from Lord Nityananda. Yeah.
And when we speak of taste, doesn't taste predominantly come from the association of devotees?
Taste comes by serving in the association of devotees. Taste, you know, any service done in the association of devotees. Of course, some taste will also be there if we're passive. But when we become active in service, the taste increases. That's obvious, no?
I mean, it's handed down, right? The experience of Krishna consciousness we get.
Also direct. You also get a direct... The process is handed down, the mercy is handed down, the blessings are there, and then you also get a direct experience. Sanjaya, the end of Bhagavad Gita, after serving his spiritual master very nicely, he got the direct mercy of the Lord. He got the direct Sakshat Darshan, it says. He got the direct Darshan.
But this is a certain platform.
Yeah, that's an advanced platform. That's perfection. And to us it comes in a more limited degree. But, you know, Krishna may also directly bestow some mercy upon you. Doesn't always have to come to only his devotee. No, he may also do that. Not that we reach out directly to Krishna and go bypass the parampara, but Krishna is there.
There's this example given of the moon reflected.
In the water pots.
Yeah.
Paramatma.
I'm perhaps mixing things, but that this, whatever enthusiasm, inspiration we feel, it's a reflection of the one gotten from somebody who's more advanced. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that may be ultimately there. We're ultimately under the care of one who is more advanced. But Krishna will also individually reciprocate with any devotee, not only with the prema bhaktas, with any devotee. Direct mercy. That's the point. Not that you can go bypass the devotee, you need the mercy of the devotee and follow him. But then Krishna may directly take an initiative towards us.
My experience in Krishna consciousness is that I joined because of my spiritual master.
Yeah.
And I did for many years things under his guidance, but
yeah.
It was specifically in my relationship with my spiritual master that I experienced
the greatest.
Yeah.
No, nothing is outside of the relationship with the spiritual master. The spiritual master is always with us in the form of his instruction. We're never outside of his instruction. So we're never, but still, so he's always there, but still Krishna may. So, oh yeah, give some mercy to this devotee. He does. All right, we'll end. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.